Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to How Did We Get Here, the audio road trip with no breaks. Today's topic I am very passionate about, the cultural perversion of Funko Pops. Zach, what do you think?
This is a big deal for me. I had this realization the other day. So I was in line at Disneyland when I was out in California. It's burned in my memory.
Okay.
This specific interaction. And I'm at Disneyland. I'm in line for Jungle Cruise, as you do. And in front of me in line is a guy with a tattoo.
And of a Funko Pop?
Well, not only just a Funko Pop. It's a Funko Pop of The Crow. Like, the 90s, like, is he even a superhero? I don't know what he is. The cultural figure, The Crow. It's like Sting, you know, the black and white guy.
Yeah, I'm aware.
But it was like not small. It was his entire forearm.
I'm going to see if I can find Funko Pop of The Crow.
Oh, yeah. If you search it, you'll find it.
I want to find it so I can visualize this tattoo. Oh, I see. Oh, my God. He just had that on his arm with its beady white eyes.
Uh-huh. With the Five Nights at Freddy's mask and everything. The marionette thing. It was like, it was all up his forearm. And not only that, but there was like stuff all around it. There was like fog and spikes.
Do you remember which arm?
Bats. His right arm.
Oh, this really traumatized you.
Yeah. It was his right arm. It was his left to me because I was standing to his left.
Of course.
I'll never forget it because it really made me sit back and take scope of like, do you remember when Funko Pops first dropped? Do you remember your first time seeing a Funko Pop? Because I do.
I do.
What was your experience?
I had a little store called Hastings back, local like record / CD / just nerd culture store, I guess.
Sure.
And I saw a Funko Pop and it was innocent, you know? It was innocuous. I walk by and I see this little guy with the beady eyes and go, huh, interesting. I don't remember what the first licensed Funko Pop was, but I remember it was something I recognized. Not something I was crazy into or anything. And I go,
sure,
that's interesting. And then I walked my separate path and unaware of the two timelines that are forming in front of me.
It's bizarre that like it's been going under sort of the radar, right? Mm-hmm. It's been just influencing our culture in a way that I don't think people realize. So I remember my first time seeing a Funko Pop. I was working a brand new job in Baltimore, and I was walking around during my lunch break, and I stopped by some store to waste time because it was one of those dumb corporate jobs where you don't actually work. So I stopped,
of course,
into like some kind of like a nerd store or whatever, and I saw a Funko Pop of Raphael the Ninja Turtle, but only him, not with anybody else. And I think this was before they had like everything, right? This was before Funko Pop had the capability, the manufacturing power to make every single character in existence. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'm going to get that for my desk.
Boy, did they.
Yeah. Well, that's the crazy thing is like, to me, seeing Raphael was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're making a figure of this character.
Yeah. That's all it was.
Old thing. Yeah.
That's all it was. I would really like to compare Funko Pops to COVID-19.
Okay, would you?
Yeah, I would. I think I would.
I'll let you do it.
Because I feel like when COVID was happening, when it first started, it was in the background. We heard about this plague called COVID-19, and we all said, well, I haven't ever experienced something like that, so it must not apply to me.
Right.
And I feel like people lived a very blissful life for that January, February of 2020.
Oh, yes.
And then when March hit, people had a whole month of figuring out, whoa, this came out of nowhere. I guess this the writing was on the wall, but I was too blind to see. And now the whole world is changing. And now you have that first month of the pandemic to kind of wonder, is this real? Is this staying?
Yeah.
How does this changing our daily function of life? And I think I had a similar reaction to Funko Pops, where I let them exist in the background, unaware of the danger that they stood for pop culture around the world.
Right.
Because now I feel like each individual medium of film to music to art all was trying to reach the summit, the pinnacle within your own medium. But now it kind of feels like the end game for anyone is a Funko Pop. And that's how you get cemented in history. It's the world has changed because we let it. And that's on us.
Yeah, you didn't do anything to stop it.
No.
Like if you would have had, yeah, how, well, I mean, if you had your ear to the ground, we could have stopped it somehow, but now it's too far. And I think that's kind of an interesting point, the idea that, like, I feel like now it's almost aspirational if you're like a screenwriter or somebody who's creating like a pitch to put on Adult Swim or something like that, something experimental. Like, having a Funko Pop of your main character would be pretty tight, I think. But it also is so empty. I don't know. These things, black soulless eyes, just...
It's the black soulless eyes and they all blend together. You ever seen like a Funko Pop shelf?
Oh God, like a GameStop.
Yeah.
Because that's all they have now. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that. I went to a friend's house and he asked me, hey, what kind of YouTube do you watch? And I go, I don't really know. I just kind of let Jesus take the wheel. I click it. And he goes, want to see a Funko Pop channel?
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I don't think this was something he was super passionate about. I think he was just fascinated that other people were this passionate.
Yeah, you know? Of course.
So he takes me through and people were going to like the Wall Street of Funko Pops.
Oh, my God.
And like, and it's just this giant place, this giant, it's like warehouse, essentially, of every Funko Pop on shelves. And it's, you know, you got people lining down the block for it. And it was just a guy going on a big haul for his Funko Pops. And I learned something. Did you know, you know, in Pokemon, how there are shinies? Like, you know, one in every 4,096 chance or 8,000 something chance
that you get
a shiny. Funko Pops have those too.
They do?
Yeah.
Like, do you mean, wait, by shiny, are we talking about like a rare, like, version of something which is the same, like a variant?
Just,
or is it like a misprint?
COVID.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. It's okay. I get it. It's a mutation. That's what it is.
What are they called? They have like a different name.
I'm sort of looking at it vaguely now because I see like a red and white Tom Servo. Oh, wait, that's a different thing. I was going to say, because this is from Mystery Science Theater. Never mind. I'm fascinated by this stuff because it's so strange how, as
I think they're just called rares, by the way.
Oh, that's boring.
Yeah.
I've seen the really big ones. Those are cool to me. Like the giant ones. I've seen like a giant Bulbasaur or something. Okay, cool is a strong word, but I think they're neat.
I'm scrolling through and I see Naruto. And you know Naruto, how he does like the sexy jujitsu or whatever?
Yep.
And turns into a girl? They have a Funko Pop of that. And it's just like, why are we making sexy Funko Pops? I have another problem. I really hope COVID doesn't go this route because I'll just be confused then.
Yeah, no sexy COVID, please. I hope that's not the case. It's so weird to me that I don't know. Seeing the internet sort of change the landscape of entertainment and for culture to become culture on its own, where shows and like, do you remember this character? Do you remember this moment? And the minutia of this stuff is being so celebrated to the point where like even the super minor character or a one-time bit can be a Funko Pop. I've seen things where, like, I don't know, Bart wears a funny hat on The Simpsons, and now that funny hat Bart is a Funko Pop. And I'm like, what is the market for this? How many people are going to buy this? But people do. And it's because of this obsession with, I don't know if it's a nostalgia thing. I don't know if it's like recreating the past. I don't know if it's like owning that moment in your mind, almost like an NFT of a memory.
So I have that. Wow. Okay. Let me process that one.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess Funko Pops are probably the most fungible tokens there are. You know? So probably like you know what? Maybe I'm pro Funko Pops. I think they could fight the war. They're the antithesis of an NFT.
And you put it that way. Because they're mass produced.
Yeah.
They all look the same. Well, I guess all the NFTs look the same too.
No, they're all unique. According to people who buy NFTs.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
I'm looking at it now. Okay, yeah, here we go. So Bart Simpson as a crow, because he was a crow in one of the Treehouse of Horror episodes. So they made that specifically. So you could, if you wanted him as a crow. It's so bizarre to me that they've created an entire culture of like, remember this? But I guess that's all the internet now is anyway.
Yeah, but want to know something a little crazy on the topic of NFTs?
Oh, God. Sure.
I don't know why, but I've talked to a lot of like the top YouTubers on the platform and everything.
Uh-huh.
And for Christmas, YouTube just gifted them all NFTs.
Wait, what?
This is a private behind the scenes thing because I don't think anyone's
serious?
Publicly talking about it. Yeah. Yeah. YouTube just, you got a box from YouTube that says thank you and you opened it and it's a picture of the most awful visual you've ever seen. It just goes, this is an NFT. And they
no
gave you like a
way.
Little, I am so serious when
no.
I say this and it shocked me. Yeah. That YouTube is for Christmas gifting NFTs to some of the top creators, and all the creators I want or all the I know don't want it. They're like, what do I do? they got force fed an NFT.
Oh my God. So now you just pushed it onto somebody. You own this now. It's like because dropping a baby at your doorstep. Well,
what do you want to do? If you want to sell it, you're the problem. Like, what
do
you do?
Oh my God, dude.
You have to be an owner of an NFT, I guess.
They're making you complicit.
Yeah.
They're roping you into it that way. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I will give you more details on this later. But I just wanted that to be a quick little pit stop because it has been bouncing around in my head ever since then because I just can't believe that.
That's insane. You're just inflicting someone with a curse. Take this. This is yours now.
Yeah. And anyways, to dial it back. To the holy justice that
Hold
Funko
on,
Pops.
Hold on. But,
yeah, okay.
But before you go, what's really funny, I actually got a gift from Twitch the other day. They give out like a partner gift. And I didn't get an NFT. I got socks and pins and a blanket that said partner on it.
Do you wish you got an NFT? It would have been funnier.
Maybe, yeah, kind of. I mean, like, I this Twitch partner thing, like, it almost feels like they gave me a gift so I could flex on affiliates.
I think that is the number one reason, so do as they wish.
That's just so weird to me, though. Like, who is getting off on that? I am a Twitch partner, and now I have a blanket that
power tripping, power tripping. It's in.
I don't know.
The season's in right now.
I would have rather had an NFT that I could just keep forever. What kind of NFT was it, though? Do you know? Is it like a monkey?
Yeah, I saw it. I wish it was a monkey. It just looked like an AI-generated scribbles, really.
Oh, what? Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it didn't even... I think it kind of looked cooler than monkeys, I will say. But at the end of the day, it's still an NFT. And I was just, again, still shocked that is happening. It's a thing. YouTube's rolling out. Anyways, to dial it back now to Funko Pops, you know,
true.
Okay,
the most
I want to talk about
tokens.
What Funko Pops are like, what do they aim to achieve and why are they successful? I really want to analyze that because, I've taken like some master classes on like character design, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that they always teach you is make a silhouette. Like your character should be recognizable from just their silhouette.
Right.
Yeah. And Funko Pop's not. They all look the same. But if you see a silhouette of a Funko Pop, despite not seeing the BDIs, you know it's a Funko Pop.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a play for them. In terms of having that great silhouette and not the character that they're representing.
Yeah, I think it's more about brand awareness than character awareness for Funko Pop. And then to step on that a little bit further, when it comes to character design, it's always good to have your character be as simple as possible. Because if you notice, the most popular IPs around the world are the ones that kids can draw.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I mean, Pikachu, Kirby.
Sure.
And then like a lot like SpongeBob.
Oh, SpongeBob. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think like even Mickey Mouse is a prime example of that.
Yeah. Because even if you can't do the whole thing, you could do the ears, right?
You can do the ears. And if you draw Mickey, if you draw like this figure with like giant ears and then little red trousers, you're like, oh, that's Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Like I would say of all the popular IPs in the world, Mario is probably the most complicated one. And it's just because he has a lot of clothing. And
But you could still draw his head in like a hat.
Yeah.
And I think you if you imagine stash, somebody with a hat, yeah. The stash,
You can see a kid draw Mario and you can be like, oh, that's Mario.
Sure.
And I think like, one, the gameplay styles are different, but I think like that's a huge difference in Link versus Mario is that Mario is just easier to draw and get an idea across.
Yeah. Yeah. Link doesn't really have anything all that distinguished. And part of that is just because his character design has changed, right? So like, he's been a bunch of different people, but he's just like a boy in a green hat, right? He's just
for the most part.
Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then look at Kirby, right?
Yeah. Oh, but, dude, I actually I just put on Kirby last night on stream. I forgot how the NES game literally starts with telling you how to draw him. And it's just like, draw a circle. You make Kirby. Good job.
That's the thing. Like, it's just that really defines what is a quote unquote good character design. Like, obviously, it depends on what you're marketing to. Like, some of the most sickest badass villains aren't going to be drawn by kids.
Right.
But I think like, if you want to look at mainstream success, like there's a reason why Pokemon is like the largest, highest grossing franchise in the world.
Yeah.
Lots of cute little figures to draw. And, you know, they're probably not drawing like Giratina or anything. They're probably drawing Squirtle, Charmander.
Yeah. And Jigglypuff is mad popular, especially in Japan. And it's just like, that's just as I never really considered the fact that like, if you just make it easy for the young generation to draw, they sort of get to have that experience of creation with them early on, and it sort of roots in their memory. That's kind of interesting.
I think it's all about how recognizable it is, and the more simple the design, the more easy it is to, like, remember it, I feel.
Because,
like, there have been so many complicated characters where I see that, I'm like, I know that from somewhere.
I got you.
For the exact same reason, I never watched, like, it took me so long to actually watch One Piece, but every time, even when I was a kid, I would see Luffy and be like, oh, I know that's from One Piece. Even though I knew nothing about what the series was. It's just like the character is so simple, therefore it's memorable.
Yeah, I sort of feel that way about anime in general because I don't watch anime, but like if I see the kid in the Straw Hat, I know what that is.
Naruto.
Yeah, I know Deku. Like I know certain things just based on the shape, but I don't know how much of that is character design or just art style, right?
Because
like art style is another big piece of it, but it's not explicitly the same thing. But
I think it would be different if you see a character you don't recognize and you're like, oh, they look like they're from One Piece.
What's the one? Is it Kill la Kill? The girl
Kill la Kill
scantily clad. Yeah, I never know what she's from, but I'm like, oh, that's the one with the that one. Okay, yeah.
Honestly, okay. banger series though.
It always sounds like whenever I look up synopsi, mm-hmm. I guess multiple synopsises of anime, they always sound fascinating, and I just never get interested in actually watching it. I don't know why. It's just like the idea of it sounds so cool. But mm-hmm. then I can't follow through and watch it for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm biased.
Where I was going with that is that I think Funko Pops are so simple to where it's not that the kids want to buy it.
Uh-huh.
It's that the grandparents want to buy it.
Well, yeah. For themselves or for the kid?
For the kids.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I was going to go with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're like the ultimate Christmas present because like, you know, you don't, grandmothers aren't going to know what the hell, how to buy a Pokemon.
Yeah.
But when they, but if they have these ideas in their mind and then they see Pikachu Funko Pop, they're like, that's it.
It's perfect when you're, I don't know about you. My mom knows that I used to love Ninja Turtles when I was a kid. And uh-huh. now I'm 33 years old and I still get Ninja Turtles gifts.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Exactly. Yeah. She knows I like, and actually raccoons are my favorite animal. She got me a raccoon umbrella and a raccoon lamp. And I'm like,
that's awesome. Actually,
I love you, mom. Where am I going to put this stuff? And I feel like Funko Pops are perfect for that. For the mom who knows that her kid is into Kingdom Hearts, but doesn't know what a Roxas is. And you see it on the shelf and you're like, boom, right there. That's perfect.
Yeah. I think going off of that a little bit, I get this one thing a lot where it's as a kid, my family, I really like SpaghettiOs. You have SpaghettiOs?
I actually, it's funny. I loved SpaghettiOs with meatballs.
I love SpaghettiOs with meatballs. Like that was my go-to. I was a kid. I had no standard of food. And the thing is that defining trait of a child probably changed when I started having free will. I got a car and then I started like driving to get food.
Sure.
I my palate expanded a
the
fair
world
bit,
was your oyster. Yeah.
But I'm 26 and I go to my family for Christmas and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we didn't cook SpaghettiOs for dinner. And
oh,
like,
I'm a grown man.
I'm a grown man. I haven't had SpaghettiOs in a decade.
Oh my God.
And the other thing is my family. So my mom and my stepdad and my sister, for the album release show, they all came out and then they wanted to cook dinner. So they did that in my kitchen, as you would assume.
Sure.
And in it, they were like, they come find me because I was in the other room. They're like, hey, Jacob, where's your can opener? We can't find any, but we're sure you have some because of, you know, like SpaghettiOs.
Not again.
And I'm like, why? Yes, I have a can opener, but for very different reasons. Like, it's just...
It would be like if they still, like, got on you for wearing diapers. It's like, yeah, I was a baby.
I wear diapers once.
I did do that at one point for several years. My bad. Like, I don't know what they were supposed to...
Yeah.
I feel like we're sort of ringing home with a lot of people who are listening to this who like probably have a very similar thing where you did one thing one time and you're that guy because your parents are trying to connect with you, you know? Did you ever have the experience of like...
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Oh, God. How do I articulate this? The thing where family's over or there's like a family friend or something and you come out of your room to get a drink and somebody in the family
crawled
out of the cave. Yep. Wow. He lives. That kind of thing.
Yeah. It's always the uncle you didn't like.
Yep. Oh, God. I'm sorry if I'm upsetting anybody. I know the holidays just passed everybody listening to this.
Exactly. The holidays just passed. Let us get it out.
Yeah. It's just, oh, God, I was so resentful after that every time. God, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to think on, like, other things that I did. I think this is just a parent thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents will say stuff like, whenever I'm with them, they're like, every time I see you, I always think of you just as a little kid. And you're so grown up. And I get it. It's probably a parent thing. You probably think about it a lot. But I get that every single time I see my family. And it's just one of those things, like, as the subject, I don't know how to respond to that.
Right. Yeah. Because you just grew up.
You didn't even do anything.
You just existed for a longer period of time. And you're like, sorry.
I'm 8 years older than my younger sister. And, you know, she's now about to graduate high school. So I see that. Yeah. And I'm like, I remember when she was just a little thing.
Yeah.
And I can get the mentality, but I always bite my tongue on telling her that because I know she doesn't care.
Yeah.
It just makes her feel like she's younger than she is. I feel like it belittles her because when you're a kid, you want to feel older. And I feel like if I keep reminding her that she was little, she isn't like that.
Well, especially when you're like just about to graduate and it's like this big turning period in your life and you feel like an adult. Somebody's just like, you used to be a baby. You're like, yeah. Oh my God. So I got to dial it back a little bit.
Okay, we've been all over the place.
We got to go back to SpaghettiOs because good Lord, I cannot believe what I just read.
Oh, SpaghettiOs, wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
In 2013, SpaghettiOs tweeted a commemoration of the 72nd anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attacks. It was met with criticism.
That's good. I like that Justin, when spoon feeding us this fun fact, he let us know it was met with criticism. Is it a deleted tweet? Because I would like to see this. It's printed somewhere.
SpaghettiOs Pearl Harbor. And there it is. I searched it.
Incredible search. Will you read this word for word for me? I'm eager at the end, like the edge of my seat.
All it is it's a picture of the SpaghettiOs guy, like with his tongue out. And it says, and holding an American flag. And it says, take a moment to remember hashtag Pearl Harbor with us. They hashtagged it.
Hashtag Pearl Harbor is insane.
They didn't even say anything about it. They just said, let's remember it. Take a moment to remember it with the SpaghettiOs, man. He's not even dressed for the occasion, by the way. He like, it's the same render they use at the front of the can with his hand on his hip and with his little sneakers. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't know if the SpaghettiOs man needs to weigh in on this kind of stuff.
That's, brands have to be political now. And I think that sounds
so weird?
Exhausting. It's so weird.
Oh, man. Why do we need to know what the Sugar Bear thinks about domestic terrorism? Do you think
Tony the Tiger would vote blue?
Outwardly, yes. Privately, no.
Ooh.
I think Tony the Tiger has a public face in a private life.
Personally. He panders to the liberals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely, dude.
Because
his whole gimmick is about like personal strength and, you know, sort of the like becoming your best self and sort of the ideals of self-improvement, which I think could fall very easily down like the Jordan Peterson rabbit hole. I think he's very self-help oriented. I think Tony the Tiger is very much in that camp, but I think he knows how his bread is buttered. So.
Yeah, I was, my friend got a little book about Pokemon from their dad for Christmas. You know, it's same thing. As a kid, you like Pokemon. So here you go.
Yep.
And we were reading it together. And they have, like, question number two. How many Pokemon are there in the first game? And it goes, like, 3,200,151. You know, it's just like. Like they're really like giving them to you.
Yeah, sure.
And then it's just stuff like that. Like, who is Brock? Ash's friend, the leader of Team Rocket, or a random trainer? Like, it's just like,
yeah.
And then they were all very innocent questions until you got to number 19.
That's pretty deep. Getting into number 19. Jeez.
Then it says, the December 6th, I have a picture pulled up on my phone of this. I'm reading this word for word. The December 16th, 1997 anime episode, Electric Soldier Porygon, was pulled off of TV because of...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh,
you know this one, right?
I do, but explain it to those who don't.
Hear me out. It's multiple choice. So,
okay.
A, an unintended racial slur. B, a flash of nudity. C, it was blamed for causing seizures in viewers.
Oh, my God. That the first two are so much worse.
I think they did that on purpose. I think they're trying to make
Yeah. They're trying to make They're downplaying it. Yeah.
They're trying to say, like, oh, we could have said a racial slur. We could have had a flash of nudity, but we just got blamed for causing seizures.
Listen, we may have hospitalized several hundred kids, but at least James didn't say the N-word.
They got blamed for it.
Oh, that's true. Very they got blamed here. For that. That's smart. Bro, legal looked over that statement.
I just want to
say
that all of these questions were so fun and kid friendly. And then, like, the next question after is, like, what day is National Pokemon Day? And it's just,
it's propaganda.
I really want to go word for word on this because I like an unintended racial slur as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They're like, we didn't say a racial slur, but if we did, it would have been unintended.
I guess there are some words that, like, may or may not, depending on time periods and context, I guess I can see where they're going. Like, if I don't know, but the idea that, like, even if it did happen, they could throw up their hands and be like, well, I don't know.
It was
I don't know
an accident.
What he meant by that. My bad.
And then B, a flash of nudity. No apology there. They're just like, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that may have happened.
And they could have put causing seizures in viewers. They could have put that. But C says it was blamed for causing seizures in viewers, which is...
It could have been anything.
It loses all accountability.
Yeah, it was blamed for that. It didn't actually happen. It could have been anything. Could have been what they ate that day. Could have been their physical activity levels. Who knows?
I really like detaching yourself from any situation for saying, well, I was blamed for doing that. And they go, well, did you do it? And it goes, well, that's not what I'm talking about right now.
I was blamed for it.
Officer, I was blamed for robbing this bank. Why am I being blamed?
Then you could pull the victim card. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's where I was going to go. Blame is such like a victim-y word.
Yeah.
Because, like whenever people talk about like parental issues, and they're like, yeah, my parents would always blame me for this and this, or like in relationships.
Oh, right.
It's like you hear a lot of that. And then putting that word in a sentence of your own destruction is just so unapologetic.
Yeah. It's a powerful tool, right? Like, I think that's blame itself is something that's learned sort of generationally, right? Like, I feel like that is something that you sort of learn from your parents. If that's something that they're into, if they just blame you for everything, it's something that you sort of take on for the rest of your life into your world, you know? And so, like, no matter what happens, it's somebody else's fault. It's a generational thing, I think.
I think it's interesting, but I really love how 20 years later, on this Pokemon seizure thing, and they're still backpedaling.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Yeah, they haven't forgotten. They know somebody's going to come up with it and realize what happened, and then they're going to have that out there to quell the rumors.
Did you know somebody's that Porygon has never been in the anime since then?
Oh my God, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that poor guy. He got blamed for the whole thing.
He got blamed for it, which, okay, actually...
They threw him under the bus.
I do want to talk about this because he did get blamed for it. Porygon didn't even cause that in the anime episode.
I know. You know what?
Do you know who did?
I do. You know why I know? I swear to God, I literally looked at this on stream last night. This was literally last night. Go ahead and tell the viewers.
Pikachu.
Not Pikachu.
The face of Pokemon ain't what it looks like.
What did he do?
I don't even remember. He just you're obviously more well versed than I am. Didn't you just like Thunderbolt, Thundershock something, and it just disco lights?
Yeah, I think Ash told him to do it. So I think Ash is who really has all the blame, right? Like there are layers to this. Like everybody thinks it was Porygon. It wasn't Porygon. It was Pikachu, but Pikachu was following the orders of whatever. So yeah. Anyway. I literally watched this yesterday because there's a famous video of a pastor from a Kansas church explaining why Pokemon are tools of the devil. He says that Kadabra has a pentagram on his forehead. He doesn't. It's a star. He goes off about how Pikachu's tail is like Satan's S, but in reverse. But anyway, he brings this up. And honestly, bro, if I was a parent in like 1998, 1999, whenever this seizure thing happened, 97, that's when it was, and my kid had a seizure because of Pokemon, I might think they're the devil too, frankly. Yeah. I think I'd be pretty bought in, whether I'm listening to this guy or not. But okay, yeah, so apparently the effect was caused by red and blue flashes. 20 minutes into the episode, Pikachu stops vaccine missiles with his Thunderbolt attack, resulting in an explosion. What? Insane.
That's a jam-packed episode. Also, do you remember the episode of giant Tentacruel knocking down the skyscrapers?
Yes. Yeah, it was a kaiju.
Yeah, they pulled that out after 9/11.
Okay. That's probably that's a good thing, I think. That's probably
I think
it's
a good thing. But I'd love to touch on, did you grow up religious? Have we talked about this?
We talked about, I think we've like,
we had a whole episode of talking about Jesus and his miracles.
We did, but I did not grow up religious at all. I went to church every once in a while with my dad because my stepmom was like very religious.
Gotcha.
I had that experience, but I wasn't like, you know, indoctrinated.
So I love exactly what you talked about, this youth pastor talking about how Pokemon are the devil and everything like that. Youth pastors, their whole jobs were always to be cool enough as an adult and also be able to take these things in pop culture and spin them into a religious talk.
Yeah.
And, you know, my best friend, roommate Joe, him and I both grew up in the South, and we both grew up Southern Baptist. So we have a lot of history in the religion and everything. And whenever Among Us started getting popular, Joe just told me, he goes, dude, Among Us is getting so big. It's just a matter of time until youth pastors start comparing Jesus and devil to imposters.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we held our breaths, and literally the next day someone like tweeted at us an example of it, and it just says Jesus is no imposter, you know, and just like, okay, you have imagine the little crewmate Among Us bean with like long hair and a thorn crown,
sure, sandals,
and it's just they don't waste any time.
Oh my god.
And I just find it fascinating how anything in pop culture, they're like, how can this be compared to religion? Because people, I'm sure there have been Fortnite seminars, you know? Build and crank 90s to avoid the sin on the floor. And they try to take your building down. And they try to bring you down to their level. But if you keep going towards the heaven, eventually you'll find a victory royale in Christ our Lord. Amen. Can we have a word of prayer?
Always drop with Jesus. Always drop with Jesus.
Oh my God.
The chug jug is the holy water. Communion, you know, I get it.
Yeah, I went to a Christian summer camp, and all Christian summer camps, like most religious state, I still thought these are pretty brainwashy, huh?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because it's like, let's say the camp is like Saturday to Saturday, right?
Sure.
That's usually how it goes. every Thursday night, no matter what camp you are, it's Thursday night because that's like algorithmically the best time. You know, you're leaving Saturday morning. Let's get you all religious'd up Thursday night so you get to enjoy Friday and talk to people about how religion-y you are.
Yeah.
And then you leave Saturday morning. Thursday night, it's the optimal time. And they all try and just, I don't remember. They're, you just have someone who went through the worst life possible and talked about how because of the Lord, our God, our Savior.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and when you're like, whoa, this person came from meth. Like, yeah. I'm in a way better spot than he is. I should be more religious. And they just get to you. They know how to get to that children's psychology. But, yeah, when I went to church or the summer camp, it was in Tennessee, I think. And I get there and they all ask us to write on percentage wise, 0 to 100, how likely are you to get into heaven? And you're
hold on, really quick. Before, so you went from Oklahoma to Tennessee? How far was that?
It's like a 10-hour drive.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Was it like a church thing or was it like just your family?
My family found this awesome Christian boys summer camp.
Oh my God, dude. That's a trek.
It was a trek. And
they couldn't find anything closer? Jesus.
They could. I just went to both.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you got to take whatever you can get.
Insane, though. We slept in teepees outside.
Yeah, I've done
with
that.
With no air conditioning.
You know what's funny?
We had 10 boys and 2 counselors in there.
Yeah, I've done, it's so funny. I've done all of this, but in a non-religious context, because I was a Cub Scout.
Based.
Yeah, Cub Scouts are basically it's like the same thing but without God, where it's like staying out in the woods and stuff. Yeah. it's the atheist's choice. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to. So you were getting off percentages of how likely you are to get to heaven as a 10-year-old.
And I think I put down like a modest like 75%. You know.
I hope so. I don't know. Like, I don't know how God is judging me. But.
Yeah, I think I was open to the possibility. I was like, I don't know how judgmental he is. Like, you know, I could turn in an English paper and get a 94 from one professor and like an 87 from another, you know?
Yeah, is he judging on a curve? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have a lot of questions for the big man upstairs. And then they pretty much told me, like, if you said anything less than 100%, you're going to hell. And I'm like, whoa. Yeah, that's what they say.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's what Christian summer camp looks like.
Oh, dude, that just breeds a mentality where nothing you ever do is wrong. And you just say you're blamed for things that you did.
It is like that, isn't
it? Oh, my God.
Poor gun.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, so but the thing is, you know, they tell me that and I'm like, oh, okay. And then there's one kid who's like, well, I put 100%. And we're like, shut up, Brian.
Brian's definitely going to hell. For sure.
Yeah. Because, you know, they were saying like, you know, if you've accepted the word of Christ, our Lord Savior, into your heart, you are saved already and you're guaranteed into heaven. So I'm like, okay, well, if this is a binary thing, this is kind of a trick question, was it not? And the answer is yes. But then you go to bed, and every single morning that whole week, we wake up at 8 a.m. to an alarm going off from Switchfoot Meant to Live.
No way.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God. Bro, that track bangs, though. That's crazy.
It does go hard.
That's a good track.
Especially like when you're 10 and you hear that song for the first time and you're like, dang, Christian rock goes hard.
Yeah.
And they get you. And they're like, y'all heard of Skillet? And then you,
They almost got me. I remember I was really big into like Newfound Glory and Dashboard Confession, stuff like that when I was around
Sadie
that age.
Hawkins dance in my khaki pants.
Yeah. And
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. They're really good at numbers. Auto Trader.
Switchfoot was really big around that time, and I remember the moment that I found out they were Christian rock, and I immediately like left their CD on the thing. Like I just because they hit it so well, bro. Usually they're pretty upfront about that, but Switchfoot was like they're really trying to infiltrate.
We were meant to live for so much more, and I was like, I hear it now. But like, you know, I heard that song and I'm like, oh, well, Christian rock's pretty cool.
Right.
And then all churches loved Toby Mac.
Oh, really?
Are you aware of Toby Mac?
No. I think, Toby Mac, is he not a, no, I was thinking of Toby Keith. No. That's what I'm thinking of, the country guy. Who's Toby Mac? Toby
Keith, actually, my church did like Toby Keith because his family was like right around.
Oh, shit.
Like,
okay.
Yeah, Toby Keith's son went to my high school and everything like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy. That's all Oklahoma really had.
So who's Toby Mac?
He was just like a, I would say Christian, like R&B type, pop type. It's kind of a weird genre. Anyways, it's just, I learned about Toby Mac outside of church through Nexon's audition, which if anyone out there knows what I'm talking about, that is number one, the game I grinded the most as a kid. And no one else. So like Nexon made Maple Story, right?
Yeah.
But they also had Audition, which was a really, it was like a pseudo rhythm game. It was kind of like like DDR, you had to press the arrows and everything like that. It's they gave you a bar, like a few seconds to type in this arrow combination. So it wasn't really to a rhythm.
Sure.
But I think people thought it was a rhythm game. And it was fun. I just really like doing things fast, like call and response. You know the Clefairy minigame from Pokemon Stadium?
Yep.
Yeah, like that. No one can beat me in speed at that game. There's also Minnie's Memory in Toontown Online. Hit me with any like quick memorization call and response game. I'm on it. Anyways,
got it. Yeah.
Back to church camp. That's a huge pivot.
Rather large.
Yeah.
Justin has apparently, according to a study, I don't know if this is true or not, according to Christians, as an average, there's a 33% chance one will go to heaven. Meanwhile, 72% of people believe they will go to heaven.
All of them are going to hell.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, right? I just feel like a 33% chance you're going to heaven. Like, how do you quantify that? I don't know how you could put that. You don't even know who's there now.
It's one of those statistics. It's like, what do I do with it? you watched The Good Place?
No, I've heard it's great, though. I heard it's
I'll
very
good.
I'll say
nothing more, but incredible show. And just interesting deep dive into morality. And I think it's just funny on top of it. But yeah, just it makes you think. And I think it's pretty cool. Pretty good show.
I feel like people would be way holier if they knew the rules of the game, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, living a holy life is just, there's so much. There's too much information.
In A Good Place, they talk about the one guy who they're like, you know, religion is so hard. No one's ever going to get it right. And, you know, they're like, I don't know what the Christians were pretty far off. And because, you know, this place is all about like heaven and everything after you die. And then they're like, who got it correct? Was anyone right? What religion was right? And goes, none of them, actually. But this one guy, and they point to like this framed picture of like a college stoner. He goes, this dude got high in his junior year of college and just started spouting things off and was like 80% correct. And it's just, I don't know, it's a funny bit to me.
It's pretty good. Apparently, Toby Mac's faves are the color green, golf, and popcorn.
What? Okay. what?
He loves those three things. Green, golf, and popcorn. And Jesus.
And no, that's not on the list.
Oh, God. He needs to rectify that this instant.
Yeah, that's some sacrilege favorites, if I have to say.
Yeah, I never had the Christian camp experience, but I did have the Cub Scout thing. Mm-hmm. Did you ever do Pinewood Derbies?
No, but if I can say one more thing about my church camp.
Yeah.
They would give us things like we would go ride on inner tubes. We would go jump on like a giant, like, you know, at some water parks, how they have like the
blobs.
Little blimp thing. Yeah, blobs.
Yeah, blobs. Yeah, blobs. Yeah.
We had like some tree rope climbing stuff with like belays and everything. But at the end of every activity, we would do three a day. It was a jam packed week.
Sure.
We would always be asked, how can we compare this to our own religion or our own relationship with Christ?
Oh.
So let me give you an example. Let's go. I think the easiest one is the inner tube, you know?
Yeah, so God is the inner tube who saves you from drowning? I don't, right?
No. You have to compare drowning to something.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so here's a good example. This was mine. Inner tube is kind of like the perfect example because you're like, all right, the treacherous waters of sin, and sure, you are on your inner tube, and this is your faith, being pulled by the ship that is Christ our Lord. And although you may fall into the sin, you have to get back on your faith and trust for God to pull you out of it once more.
That's pretty good. I'm converted. Okay.
Exactly. So you had to figure that out every single thing. It was just like, we played baseball. Compare baseball to Christ.
Oh, God. Yeah. I was going to say, they're just making it harder and harder. Finding harder and harder tasks to relate. I wouldn't even be able to have fun. I'd be thinking the whole time, like, okay, the ball, the bat is Jesus. The ball is the devil. My mitt is chastity. I would be so confused.
No one ever once mentioned abstinence in that, but I think it would have been so funny to be this kid who's always bringing up sex. And the counselor's like, what? I guess the inner tube could be abstinence. Don't see why it can't be.
You would have to make sure, like, you'd have to talk to his parents, like, this kid's getting exposed to some stuff. Maybe limit his internet usage.
Why does he know the word abstinence? He is 10.
Where did he learn this? Oh, God, that's funny. That's good.
Yeah, there's so much I could say about these Christian camps. I think the weirdest thing is also they always wanted you to mingle with the opposite sex, and they always made, like, a big deal about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, I went to another camp called Falls Creek in Oklahoma. I think it had, like, the third highest teen pregnancy rate in the United States. Woohoo. And, Also, I want to say I went to Christian camp several times as a kid. I went to arts camp, different vibe.
Oh, sure. Yeah. God, yeah. Like diametrically opposed, I would imagine.
Yeah, they're on opposite poles.
The other one is almost nihilistic and just, yeah.
They're complete opposites.
Sure.
The surging antithesis of Bible camp is art camp. But yeah, so the other thing about it was they always wanted you to, like, try and swoon the women, and they always made a big deal.
That's so weird.
Yeah, when I was at this camp with my church, they had, like, oh, it's icy date night. It's date night. And all the girls were, like, draw into, like, a hat and, like, get a guy's name. And then we had more girls at our church than guys. So some guys had two dates, which is not very monogamous for a very monogamous religion.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little strange.
But I think the weird part is this church was 7 through 12.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Grade-wise? Oh,
dude. Yeah, that's a wide number.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was in, like, 7th-ish grade, and they put me on a date with, like, a sophomore in high school. And
oh, dude.
Yeah, like, you know, at the time, I'm just like, oh, this girl's good looking, and you know, she's so popular. This is cool. But look, looking back, she was like, oh, God damn it. I got the fucking 12-year-old, you know, like,
I got this fucking kid. What am I going to talk to him about?
Yeah.
Legos?
Yeah. And then they encourage you to leave the little cabin you're in and go to the bigger campus and get an icy together.
Oh, dude, and that's weird. Yeah,
I think it's weird how much they try to force romance in these kids.
So they're trying to teach you courtship.
Yes.
Like the act of dating and wooing and being.
I understand the formula, but I think it could have at least been like, we're going to put the middle schoolers together. We're going to put the high schoolers together.
Yeah, you could have been a little bit more exact with the age ranges. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that.
You put 7, 8 together, 9, 10, 11, 12 together, and everything's so much easier.
You know, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible idea to do something like that, if I'm being honest. Cause like, I don't know. I'm of two minds about it. Obviously, I think you tighten up the age ranges, but I think that a lot of kids like are so intimidated by that stuff and they just never get the experience. Yeah, I think it helps. Like, cause even if like the adults are forcing you to do something like an activity together, even if it is a little weird, at least you have an excuse to be like, yeah, it's weird that these grown-ups are making us do this, haha, but you're still doing it, and it's like, you don't like it, fine, whatever. You're uncomfortable for a little bit. But it's better than not doing it ever, and I feel like a lot of kids would just get paralyzed and not actually, like, do that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm stupid. Relationships inside of the church spawned because of, like, those nights.
Yeah. I guess it's not bad.
Yeah. I will say, what I thought was the most scandalous thing ever, I am going to dish some high school drama out on my podcast a decade later.
Oh, no. That you're going to ruin them. Spill it.
I know. I'm going crazy, a little unhinged. The head guy of my like youth group, not the pastor, but kind of like the resident good boy, right? Sure. His name was, let's say, Alex. Let me make something up.
It's a good name.
His family was super involved in the church, and he sang and played guitar for like the church band, you know, like real shining good boy. He was,
yeah.
He played baseball. Like he's whatever. He had a girlfriend in the church who's, let's say her name was Alexa.
Not also Alex.
It's Alexa.
All right, Alex and Alexa, sure.
And Alexa's best friend was Alexandra, and they were inseparable. And then, 2 years pass, one day at church camp, this whole drama comes out, and apparently Alex has been dating both of them.
Yo!
Which
at the same time?
At the same time!
No! Alex!
I was shocked.
I mean, you said that the Christian camp kind of taught you that, right? Every guy, you know, more guys than girls.
You got girls. Two girls.
Yeah, you're going to have two girls. Sorry, ladies.
I'd imagine, I love that as a defense. Like, okay, well, you remember when we went on that icy date? They gave me two girls. So what was I supposed to think I was supposed to do? I am being blamed for cheating.
It's really establishing an insatiable need that will never be filled later on in their life. That's tough. Oh, dude. Yeah. That's sad.
So, God. Do you got a quick Cub Scout story to sneak in here? I filled up the space.
No, with that's Christian fine. Christianity. Fine. So, I was curious if you knew about Pinewood Derbies. Do you know what they are? You said never did it. Okay, so the Pinewood Derby.
I can kind of imagine. I think I've seen them in like cartoons and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. They're, you know, people sort of know them from media, whatever. Listen, listeners, if you have experienced this, I hope I'm bringing you back because, these are very vivid memories for me. I don't know if they still do them, but basically Pinewood Derbies are, these tournaments or competitions or whatever, where you and your Cub Scout group, your troop, whatever you call it, create little race cars, little derby cars out of pine wood, and you could decorate it however you want. You put the wheels on, you paint it, whatever. And I think the idea in this sort of like masculine sort of guy focused sort of thing that teaches resolve and preparedness, I think the idea of the Cub Scouts thing is you're supposed to do it with your dad, right? And I never did it with my dad. I always did it with my mom because my dad was, he had custody of me on Thursdays and every other weekend. We just didn't at the time. We did other stuff. So my mom helped me out with the Pinewood Derby. And we would, you know, paint the car and make the little design and make it cool and try to win a race. Basically, they would put your car on this ramp that would go down. It's just a simple ramp and whoever reached the bottom first won. So I did this with my mom for 3 years. I was a wolf and then a bear and then a weebelow, I think. That's what they are in Cub Scouts. I never won a single race once.
Awesome.
I was the only racer who did it with his mom. So everybody else had their dad and I had the one woman and we never won a race building a car. So we sort of...
It's not great for the movement.
No, we sort of set back feminism by a few years, I think. But the last year I did it, I was a Weeblo, and we made this really cool semi-truck. And we thought it'd be so cool to make this big-ass semi-truck thing. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I'd never won a race before. Not even, like, a tournament, but a single race or a heat. I always lost. And we made this semi-truck with the hopes that it would do well. And it didn't. We lost instantly. Uh-huh. And I realized that this was my last chance to get a win. I was like 8 or 9. So I'm crying in the corner while eating Jell-O at this function, desperately trying to save face. And one of the judges comes over. He said, "Hey, buddy, you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah." He points at the semi-truck. He's like, "Is that your car?" I'm like, "Yeah." "Did you not win?" "No." "All right, buddy. I'm sorry." And then he walks away. And later that night, I won an award for the coolest car or something. I don't remember. Which was objectively not true, by the way. It was just a fucking a gray giant blob of a car. But I'll never forget that guy for taking pity on me when I lost every fucking race I ever was a part of. So I just want to blame the Cub Scouts for my inferiority complex. I really think it stemmed from never winning a race when I was 10 years old.
They should have let you win.
They should have done something. Give me a head start or something. You know what I mean? Like, could somebody help me out here? I just don't understand how my cars were always so bad. It's the same fucking kit everybody else is buying.
Hear me out.
It's $10 at the craft store.
The voice in our ear of Justin has informed us that one way to cheat at Pinewood Derby is to fill the car with liquid mercury to artificially offset the weight.
What the fuck? You could do that?
It's that simple.
Was everybody cheating?
Maybe everyone was cheating.
Everybody cheating but me.
You said they were all the same kits.
They were. Oh my God. Dude, I feel like all the dads cheated and my mom didn't. Fuck me, dude.
That has to be it.
I never won a single race or even like a piece of a race. That's insane. Holy fuck.
So, yep. How did we get here to the stunning revelation and cultural whirlwind that is changing life as you know it?
Dude.
Cheaters prosper.
Oh. Yeah, listen, cheat every chance you get. Fuck, dude, I'm trying to think of what the prize was, because it couldn't have been great. It had to have been the fucking tent.
But as a kid,
that's true.
Any prize feels incredible.
Good point. No, you're right. As a kid, like, literally, I sold, like, did you, okay, I know we're at the end of this episode. Did you have the fucking, this needs to be a future topic. Did you ever have the elementary school fundraising thing where you would sell candy bars and stuff?
Okay, I got next episode's topic on hand. All right.
Okay, good. Because I have so many stories about that. Okay. Uh-huh. Anyway, let's talk about this episode.
The cultural perversion of Funko Pops. I would like to say I had a friend reach out to me last night, actually, and was just like, "Do you guys use a thesaurus?" And I think that's funny.
Sometimes,
but we just kind of try to get like as Shakespearean as we really can. Like, how do we dramatize, the influx of incest porn on websites? How do we brush that up? I really like the paradoxical zenith of my stepbro's quantum superposition.
That was pretty good.
I think that's like the most 25-cent title we've had.
Yeah, usually our process is we just chuck giant words until we can put them in the gumbo. We can put them in the stew of the title.
I mean, the comedy of the title is very eloquently put adjective next to like the sacred geometry of McDonald's nuggets. Like that's the comedy we aim for.
It's an elaborate shitpost. But let's talk about this Funko Pop thing. Started at Funko Pops. Culture in general, and then did we go straight into Christianity, I think?
No. It went Funko Pops, it went into grandmothers buying Funko Pops, then it went to Christmas ramblings about how grandma still buys me SpaghettiOs, still buys you Ninja Turtles and raccoons. And then from there, we talked about the reason they buy is because of character silhouettes.
Yeah.
And we talked about a little character design. We went to why people buy Funko Pops.
Talked about Porygon briefly.
Porygon.
I think
we went
blamed.
From Pokemon to Porygon. Porygon getting blamed. I think I did pretty well on the first half. I'm handing the baton to you.
I don't know how we made the jump from Porygon to Christianity. I don't know how we did.
That.
Something to do about guilt, I think. Then it landed on summer camp, and then we were there for a little while.
Yeah, summer camp. Christianity is just a wild topic, especially like to come in through the lens of an adult and be like, "They told you what?"
It's bizarre for me to hear as, again, someone who, like, my mom was very sort of laissez-faire when it came to religion, but my dad's side, like I said, I went to church every once in a while. And that dude, when I met my current wife, I went to a Catholic church for the first time. Yeah, maybe. At the time, she was not my wife. We've been together forever.
Yeah, of course.
But it's like, the Catholic church is its own thing, bro. You're standing up and sitting down, and the guy says something, and you're expected to call it back. It's like, it's like a concert. It's very bizarre. It's an experience. But anyway, that's it for this episode. I think next time, we had a different topic, but I really want to talk about these school fundraisers.
Yeah, I have a lot to say. I want to talk about Scholastic Book Fair.
Yeah!
Yeah, there's
okay,
a lot.
All right, we got a lot. Okay, but that's going to do it for this episode. How Did We Get Here is produced by Deanna Gowland, Jacob Rabin, and Zach Zeeks. Our theme music is by Garrett Williamson, and our engineer audio producer is Justin Asher.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.